days while I was sleeping, and the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone.
And welcome, everyone, to Blog Talk Radio and Your Money, Your Matters. And if that's kind of the way that you feel, like Benjamin Braddock, just kind of lost and not really knowing what your direction is, we're going to see if we can help you out today and let you know that you're not alone. And you can certainly give us a call at 646-929-1020. That's 646-929-1020. And you can raise your number one, press the number one key. That'll raise your digital paw. And we will bring you on the air if you have a question. The chat room is wide open as well, and you can certainly get in there and just leave a response, and we'll take that onto the air and see if we can't answer your question or deal with that issue. But we are certainly glad that you are here with us today. And, of course, today with us is Todd Mark from Navicore Solutions and myself, Rick Grady, from Cornerstone Credit Union League. And the sound in the background is Simon and Garfunkel from the 67 movie The Graduate, which, and interestingly enough, for movie fans that kind of follow this stuff, this movie only cost them $3 million to make. I mean, that's like peanuts in the industry today, but it cost them $3 million to make that movie. And it in the first week, which you expect, you know, all of the real grand dollars coming in, it made a total of $873.
Really?
Yeah, hardly anybody went to it.
Wow.
And today it's one of the largest grossing films. It won several Oscars, mm-hmm. and various other awards for all of the cinematography and certainly for Dustin Hoffman and many of the characters in the movie, a lot of acclaims and everything else, and a lot of poignant phrases throughout the movie about life and especially life at that time, which was the young baby boomers, who we look at the baby boomers and then we realize, you know, they're pretty much the same way the millennials are today.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really no difference. I mean, we do kind of the same thing, in that a lot of us jump out of high school and we jump into college and maybe we don't have a plan, and then we get into college and we go, oh, well, this is not the major that I really wanted to be in. So we move from one major to another. Eventually, we might graduate from college. We graduate from college and then we go, well, now what am I going to do? And we don't know. I mean, we don't have a plan and we don't know where we're going to go. So we're going to try to help you out with that today, and hope your weekend was good, Todd.
And right back at you, Rick. You know, great topic, because here this weekend is the start of major college football, as you always have your Wisconsin Badger. yep. Matter of fact, it's great being that it's Labor Day weekend. You got a 3-day weekend, mm-hmm. and a lot of college football.
Yep.
And I think almost mm-hmm. all the top 25 teams play, including the two of the top four teams that are right here in the greater, mm-hmm. well, the North Texas area. You've got TCU and Baylor mm-hmm. are both playing.
Yep.
I think one of those is a Thursday or a Friday night game.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one's Thursday, one's Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And then it finishes with our Big Ten brethren.
Mm-hmm.
Ohio State is the Monday night game.
And the interesting piece about it is that Wisconsin plays Saturday night in Arlington Stadium over in Texas, or Arlington, Texas, against Alabama.
So are you going to go to the game?
I couldn't get tickets.
Really? Now, you know, talk about a good
talk game. About a big game to start out your whole season.
Oh,
with.
My gosh! But I mean, that's a huge make. I don't want to say make or break, specifically
mm-hmm.
for Alabama, that had won a couple titles the last few years.
Nick Saban is one of my favorite coaches.
Great coach, but mm-hmm. I'll tell you what: if Wisconsin can come in and win,
mm-hmm.
that sets them up for a great year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm going to be watching that game every second of the game. Anybody that calls during the time that that game is on will get my answering machine.
Now, have you ever gone down without a ticket and say, let's see what people were selling?
I've thought about it. I really have, and I'm still contemplating it. There's a lot of course, there's North Texas Badgers, Wisconsin Alumni
right.
Association, and they might be able to get me a ticket somewhere along the line. I plan to see if I can go. I would hate to miss Wisconsin playing Alabama, to be real honest.
It's right here. I mean, it's a 45-minute drive for you.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen my Indiana Hoosiers one time since I moved to Texas. They came up to UNT, and the Texas IU fan club. It was amazing. I think we had 6,000 people that were part of the tailgate show.
Really?
And local personality, Babe Laufenberg from CBS.
One of my favorites.
He was a quarterback for the Cowboys and the San Francisco 49ers. Also played quarterback at Indiana University.
Did he really? I didn't know.
Yes,
that I didn't know.
So he was our truly our MC of events. And they had several past football and basketball players that live in Texas that came and you can do pictures with. And that was really,
pretty cool.
Really fun. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the best part was that we were able to march down to UNT on the Mean Green and give those UNT people exactly what they deserved, their first ever victory over a school.
Of course, you know, my first experience with Wisconsin coming down to Texas was many, many, many years ago, right after SMU was released from the death probation that they received. And so we played in the old SMU stadium, and I went down there with, of course, all of the North Texas Wisconsin alumni to watch the Badgers play. And we were sitting in the stands, and here's how you save money. I was sitting in the stands. We were all consuming something, and I noticed that there was a Pizza Hut across the street, and I thought, I wonder if I could get them to deliver. And so I called information on my cell phone, and I asked for the number of the Pizza Hut on Mockingbird. They gave me the number. I called them, and I said, "Do you deliver?" And they said, "Yes, we do." And I said, "Okay, well, this is what I'd like." And then they'd say, "Where's your address?" And I said, "Across the street in the football stadium, Section A." And I gave them the row number and the seat number. And within 20 minutes, they delivered.
They let them in the stadium.
They let them in the stadium to deliver.
Oh, my gosh. So, Rick, I've got your ticket now to the Wisconsin-Alabama game. Here's what I'd like you to do.
Yeah.
About 20 minutes before the game, I'd like you to stop at your favorite Pizza Hut, and you say, I'd like three pizzas, and by the way, can I have one of those carriers that I can put around my neck?
Yeah.
Then you park your car, and you walk up, and say, I'm here to make a delivery in the Cowboys Stadium. And then you just kind of do standing room only.
It's really inexpensive.
Matter of fact, Rick, I'll tell you what. You could probably say, I'll give you two pizzas for your seat.
Yeah, you probably could. I know in Wisconsin, a couple of beers will buy a seat.
All right. That is your mission, and you tell us next Tuesday if you're able to get in as a Pizza Hut delivery boy. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. And speaking of college, I think we saw some high school and college students this weekend, and this made me think of you, by the way. I took my kids.
I should take my beanie off sometime, and then you wouldn't think of me like that. I only saw some college freshmen.
No. I thought of you not for that reason. I was at North Park Mall, and the coolest thing, so Mac makeup, which is not the kind of makeup I use. The kind of makeup I use is none lately. But anyway, as you can tell.
Not spelled N-U-N.
Yeah, N-U-N, not M-A-C.
Yeah.
But Mac makeup was doing some sort of a fashion show at North Park Mall. And my first thought was, I wonder if your daughter was in on a break, she'd be like a celebrity for them. It was probably local talent that was there. But so Mac was the haute is it Hot? Hot Dogs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it was, the theme was Hot Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And they had all these people in fancy dresses and tuxedos with dog masks on, which is probably a little, would probably be a little demeaning to the models.
It is, but I've seen that before.
So I think it was mostly males that had the dog masks. In females, their hair was all done up like poodle or like collie, mm-hmm. and it was crazy. And I just thought, Rick has probably seen this before. I bet his daughter has done things like this
before.
Yes,
she has.
She was
the Mad Hatter at one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, they decided to stylize the show around, you know, the whole Alice in Wonderland theme, and she was the Mad Hatter. And
wow. Well, yeah. I was walking through. I was thinking of you, and I just thought, this is something I've never really seen before.
Mm-hmm.
We should put these up on the Blog Talk Show.
Mm-hmm.
So here you go. This is from the center court of North Park Mall.
Oh, yeah. I've seen this. You know, sometimes the models will sit there and they'll get all hyped up to do some big deal for some big designer and figure, or even the younger ones. Even the younger ones that are, you know, a lot of times picked to do one of these shows, and they're all hyped up that they're going to do something on a runway, and their parents are sitting there, and their, you know, nephews and their sisters and brothers are sitting there, and then they come walking out with a mask on, and you're the parents.
Oh, gosh.
Sorry, Mom, that's the way they wanted me.
Well, it was aimed at it was definitely aimed at the young. Although you've got a very nice affluent mix of patrons at North Park.
Sure,
Hall.
You do. Mm-hmm.
But it was done, and you go up, and all these young girls are getting makeovers. Like there was like 20
mm-hmm.
stations all
mm-hmm.
the way around, so it was like a three. It was not just a stage facing one way. It was a 360 stage. You had different dogs on different sides that you'd walk around, and they'd say, come, let us try some of our product on you.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was ingenious.
Yep.
Honestly, it was really, and there is no way, if you're walking through, that you don't stop. Now, my daughter grabbed my hand, and she was like, it's a little scary. and my son is like, what the heck is this? Did we just go to a Disney World or something?
Mm-hmm.
You know? But we stayed for like a half hour, and at the end, they gave out cookies that were in the shape of dog bones. And I just thought,
somebody spent some time thinking about this.
And guess what? Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about it on our radio show. But it stuck with me. It was like, that is really a unique thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but I thought of a lot of high school, college-age
mm-hmm.
kids that were
mm-hmm.
lined up there. And I thought, this may be, they're doing this maybe because it's the start of the school year. And
mm-hmm.
of course, we're just right down the road from SMU.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's a lot of SMU students.
Which
or others.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So anyway, but for a second I thought, I wonder if Rick's daughter Alex is hanging out. Maybe it's it'd be probably taking her back 5 years ago in her career.
Yeah, but
she
does
like,
do that. Whenever she's in town, they'll give her a call. There's Nordstrom's, there's Neiman Marcus, there is Stanley Korshak. And the North Park Mall will all call her manager if she's in town. And they probably call her when she's out of town, and they just say she's out of town.
By the way, I took my kids into Neiman Marcus, and they said, I don't think we've ever been in Neiman Marcus. And I said,
yeah, there's a reason.
There's a reason. So on the first floor is the men's department, and I said, let's go look at the ties.
Yeah.
Because not that you could tell today, but when I'm out on business, sometimes I'm dressed up. So I've got a nice little collection of ties.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my ties are the variety that the high end would be from Macy's, and mostly would be from TJ Maxx, Nine Mart, you know, Ross, stuff like that. Anyway, we looked in the ties, and Katie started flipping over. She goes, "Oh my gosh, this is $500." She's like, "And she put her hands." She goes, "I'm touching all this. This is worth like thousands of dollars." And then at the very end, there was a black tie that had like diamond stitching in it, and it was $960. And I said, you know, it must be nice to be able to think, oh, I'll pick up a $960 tie, because that would be worth four of my suits.
I know it.
So anyway,
if you're in that income bracket, you're not really worried about college tuition.
Exactly. And I thought, so, you know, it'd be nice if someday, if I would consider buying a tie like that, I will have made it in a way that I cannot yet fathom or contemplate. But I got to be honest with you, Rick. If I ever make it that way, I still would never pay $960.
You know, you're right on with that. I've seen a lot of people that are that way. I think that if I ever bought one like that, I would want stitched on the top of it, "This is a $960 tie."
I know.
Everybody knew.
Because you'd say, "Wow, did you get that at Walmart?" No, I didn't.
This is a Neiman mark.
I could have bought all of the ties at Walmart for $960.
Excuse me.
I know. So that was interesting and fun. So I was thinking of you, and of course now we've got college football and college time. So perfect. And the final segue as we get into talking about the cost of college. Yesterday I was meeting with one of our compadres from United Way of Dallas, and talking about some of the needs here in Dallas, because Navicor is going to be going into their 3-year funding cycle process, and I want to make sure we're focusing on what's relevant. They said, we just hosted a panel a few weeks ago about the needs of financial capability embedded at all the schools for student success, and it was all tied around the $1.2 trillion, which, by the way, now that I think about it, Gene Chatsky was talking about this morning on the Today Show, and they just said, we need to have more infrastructure for these kids to help them graduate with less, and I was thinking, you need infrastructure in these schools to help the kids be able to graduate, period.
Forget graduate
with less debt, because financial failure to complete is the number one reason for dropout, especially like the community college level. So anyway, it was just perfect segueing into what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, and I looked at some of those things. I mean, I certainly I feel for a lot of people that want to go on to college, and I talk to them every year at the church or some other place that I meet them. The last time there was a wonderful person down in Houston. He's an immigrant from China, mainland China. Came over here with nothing. And came over here with his family and he came over, I'm going to say, probably 40 years ago when it was fairly uncommon. They settled into Houston. His parents both worked jobs. He did eventually go to college, but he, of course, had to pay his own way. They didn't have enough money set aside for college. Today, he owns a newspaper in Houston, 3 radio stations, a couple of television stations, has the newspaper, is now chained around the United States, and there's 20 locations for that. Anyway, he has built all of this stuff himself, and he is what you would consider the typical entrepreneurial story that he has worked extremely hard to get where he is. So what he decided to do was to host an event at one of the high schools and invite all the kids that wanted to come in the high schools all around Plano to come and listen to a lot of the university admission deans and other individuals that interview you before you go on to college, just to hear what they have to say about money and finance and being able to select a proper major for yourself and select a proper college for yourself. And all of the major universities that are in the North Texas area were there. And even Harvard was there, which Harvard treats it a little bit differently. Harvard, you don't directly apply and then receive something back. You apply, and the application is sent to an interviewer, and the interviewer or ers, I mean, there might be more than one person doing the interview, will contact you and talk with you. And primarily what they're looking for are well-rounded individuals that not only excelled academically, but also excelled from a community standpoint. So they're looking for kind of a different individual in that you've spent a lot of time in your community doing things for your community. You've spent a lot of time maybe in extracurricular activities, not necessarily sports. But in extracurricular activities, you took leadership positions in those. It doesn't mean you had to be the head of the club,
mm-hmm.
But you took leadership responsibility, and then you excelled academically as well. And if you pass that interview, they will then put a mark on your admissions to go in front of the admissions committee for the admissions committee to review to determine whether or not you're going to be part of the freshman class.
Wow.
So all of the classes invited in, and the way that they build the freshman class, it looks a little bit like a microcosm of the United States. So that's what they try to do, is bring all cultures and all
mm-hmm.
thoughts and ideas together, so that even if you're going to be studying business, you're going to be studying law, you're going to be studying medicine, when you enter in your freshman year, you mingle and mix together
mm-hmm.
all of these thoughts and ideas to get greater thoughts and ideas. And that's the whole idea. But the other universities were there as well, and they had very interesting things. Anyway, I thought it was very worthwhile for a lot of these students because of a couple of things. Number one, they learned very quickly that they need to apply themselves when they go because they're going to be spending a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't one of these things where, you know, it would be like buying an expensive automobile, say a $50,000 automobile, and then just driving it recklessly and never having any maintenance on it at all. This is the kind of the way one of the admission persons
mm-hmm.
put the story. You beat the car to death in four years, and it's worth absolutely zero at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So she said you have to treat it, you know, you have to treat this as an investment, but you have to be smart in your investment. That is, you need to make sure that it's going to pay back.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do have to borrow money at a certain period of time, then you're going to be able to pay that back.
Mm-hmm.
So her philosophy was, if you know when you graduate from any college or university that your starting salary is going to be $36,000, and this is the example she used, then don't borrow any more than half of that, 18. Try to pay off as much as you possibly can and work while you're at college. There's nothing wrong with working while you're going to school, whether that means you're going to go there 4.5 years or 5 years. There's nothing wrong with working while you're at school and applying some of that money to your costs to keep your costs down so you're borrowing less. Because if you borrow less and pay something down, it's like a house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could pay 20% down or you could pay nothing down. And at the change of the economy, the person that paid 20% down probably is still above water. The person that paid nothing down is below water. And basically at that point in time, their investment is worth less than they owe.
Mm-hmm.
So her philosophy was, never invest a whole bunch of money so that you're upside down when you're done.
Wow. So right on that, my girlfriend, Amy, I've talked about before,
mm-hmm.
Her son just graduated from Quinnipiac College in Connecticut,
hmm.
a private school where...
They teach you how to pronounce the name of the school for the first year.
That is.
Quinnipiac.
It was so funny, just last week, it's not a big school. It's not one. Not like the University of Wisconsin, where you hear them in the news a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But they do the polling on presidential candidates. So
all the national
news things last week were talking about. It was really funny. They're like, a recent Quinnipiac study, and I was like, oh, cool. All right. So I hope that Amy's son feels
mm-hmm.
really good hearing that every time,
mm-hmm.
and it will make him wince less at the $130,000 of loans that he's working on. So so last night, Amy's she's moved into Collin County here just in the last month and a half. So I'm helping her get things set up, and I was like, let's get some of your coming up on September 1st. Here's the first of the month, and she's not somebody that was easy to do electronic bill pay. Old-fashioned. I said, you know what?
Write a check.
Yeah, a check. And I
put it in the mail.
Yeah, and I said, well, you got a couple issues here. I said, the things that are due tomorrow, they ain't getting there on time.
They ain't getting there tomorrow.
I don't know how to tell you this. But I'm like, seriously, it's so easy. And and she goes, but don't you talk about, like, credit breaches? That's all the time. And I said, listen, I said, you set these up right. I said, there's probably a lot less to worry about when you're triggering payments from your computer
mm-hmm.
than just recklessly using your debit card in any store.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
my two cents. Had to break down that barrier. So anyway, so we were on mygreatlakes.org last night, which is one of the I think the old one of the old style student loan guarantors.
Oh, okay.
Who now
okay.
have a, I
mm-hmm.
think there's eight or nine in the country,
mm-hmm.
and their roles have changed with recent legislation where there's direct student lending now from the federal government. Excuse me, as opposed to there being federal programs that are then held up by one of these guarantors.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I'm on the site, and I'm saying, look how easy it is to set this up. You're
mm-hmm.
setting up your account. She's like, what if it's in my son's name? I said, you're the co-signer on this one. Matter of
mm-hmm.
fact, so there's it's 1 year of loans. It was $32,000 disbursed, $16,000
mm-hmm.
for the first semester, $16,000 for the second semester. And anyway, I said, you're the co-signer. They should be able to find you. I said, it's
mm-hmm.
your loan just as much as it is his.
This is true.
And
mm-hmm.
of course, she put in her Social Security number, and immediately it all came up.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, he just graduated. And I said, so when are the payments actually due? I said, because it says here, first payment is not due until September of 2017. Now, I know about
24 months.
Yeah, I said, I know the normal, you still a six-month grace
period. Yeah, that's what I thought. It was a six-month grace period. Mm-hmm.
But it says, due to this being paid ahead, you don't owe a payment until 2017.
Mm.
And they said, but if you're making a minimum payment, it's due tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this doesn't make sense. And I said, well, let's look at your account history. And I look and I said, this is weird. Every payment you've made over the last year has gone toward interest only. There's no principal reduction here. I said, what's going on?
Hmm.
She goes, that doesn't make sense. I said, you're right.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
And I said, let's start looking. And I said, I think you're going to have a call today.
Mm-hmm.
But here, so this is 1 year. $32,000 is 1 year of payments.
Mm-hmm.
This is one thing she did with her ex where some years he would co-sign, some years she would co-sign. Little did they know that would be helpful if they ever divorced. anyway, yeah.
You have to split this.
So so we're looking into it, and it's a private, I guess it's a private loan.
Mm.
And the interest rate was 8.5%. And I said, that's horrifically high.
Yeah.
Now, I said, now if it was federal, and she goes, I think he'd max out his federals at that point. But,
mm-hmm.
And I said, well, we need to figure that out. I said, because you've got amazing credit. You may be able to do better on a private loan through a credit union or something
mm-hmm.
than 8.5%. But I said, this is $30,000. I said, so let's look. I said, because all of this is showing your payments are going to interest, and I said, there's no principal. But I said, it's specifically asterisks. This is your principal balance as of. And so, sure enough, I click through and go a little deeper, and it's at 8.5% interest. And I said, your payments, you're like in a negative AM situation right now. They're saying you don't have a payment required, and it says everything you're doing is paying ahead, but it's not covering the interest
mm-hmm.
on a yearly basis. And I said, they may be allowing you to do that, I said, but you need to get to when you have, here's your schedule, your payment schedule
mm-hmm.
that, and what's your payoff period over 5 or 10 years. I said, right now, they've set it up, and I said, maybe your son did this without realizing it and saying, oh, this would be nice. Mom will make $25 here or $75 there.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but you're not covering enough. And I said, it's ballooning. I said, so you've taken out 32, and I said, you've made little payments, and your balance as of right now, it says your payoff would be 33,708. I said, I've got a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't understand. I said, so you're going to be on the phone with them today. And that was one of those perfect situations where you think, well, the kids are taking on so much debt. Well, this is the case. Well, parents are taking on the debt, too, and
mm-hmm.
if they co-signed on loans, or if they've just made the agreement that I'm covering my kids' college costs, which is, as I've told you, my daughter is 3 years away from starting school. And I've said, you get into the school you need to get into,
mm-hmm.
and it'll be paid for. We have 529s for both of our kids, which are dramatically underfunded given the ever-increasing cost of school. And I told this to my girlfriend. I said, just so you know, I said, you've got your – student loan costs for your son and her daughter. She just helped move into Rutgers this past week.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, so you'll be having those. And I said, I'll be having the same thing for my kids a few years down the road.
Mm-hmm.
As long as we have an understanding that that's my life commitment, you know, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fascinating, though, that I said, this is your loan. It's in your son's name. You're a cosigner, though. It's your loan. I said, you need to better understand the mechanics of this.
Mm-hmm.
And because the reason she goes, well, I want to make a payment because, you know, I want to be paying it down. And I said, well, that's a funny statement because you're not paying it down.
Mm-hmm.
you're doing this, and it's almost like, you got to figure out what, you know, if you're trying to pay it down, there's going to be a minimum threshold here. But this is not, if you're looking for progress, this is not it.
No.
This is
no.
not it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think, and I believe Gene Chastity said something about this on today's show this morning, what percentage of students don't understand their loans and how interest is computed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, to me, when you start talking about the economic value of going to school, there is the return on investment you'll get from an income standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to understand the cost to truly get ROI. So there's cost, there's revenue, and ideally there's a delta change of saying here's the return on your pay into school, the
mm-hmm.
return on your degree is there. But if you don't understand your costs, it's not... You know, it's not just $32,000. That's like saying, a Happy Meal, a 99-cent burger from Wendy's is really 99 cents, unless you're financing it at 25% a year. And now it's $1.24 burger
mm-hmm.
after year one.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're making minimum payments, it'll be $1.50. Then on the next year, like, well, it was just 99 cents. It was to Wendy's. Wendy's isn't making any more money off of you, but your credit card issuer is.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to understand, you know, the cost of interest and fees. And a lot of college kids just don't get that.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that a lot of them will, and we've seen results of surveys and research that have been done in the past to get people to understand, you know, if you have $1,000, using a round number, and you have 10% interest on that, at the end of the year, if you didn't make any payment on it, how much do you have left? I mean, what's the new principal balance? And there are a lot of people that can't calculate that even in their heads in a very simple mathematical problem. But it is...
Are you going to tell them, for those that are saying, well,
it depends. If it's compounded monthly, but we'll say it's compounded just once a year, and it's $110. if it was a little, you know, it just...
Wait, mm-hmm. don't screw with him.
Mm-hmm.
It was 1,000, so it would have been...
Oh, 1,000, yeah, 1,100.
It would have been 1,100.
That's right, I was working off $100 in my mind.
I was like, wow!
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great point. A lot of people don't get...
Well, it's the same way I've noticed it even when I'm going out to dinner and there are people that will get the bill and then they're trying to figure out how much they want to tip. Well, it's really easy, you know, I mean, but they can't do that kind of real easy mathematics in their head. And they may not be inclined to do that. I mean, there are people that are not, kind of right brain. They're rather the left brain, and that's okay. You can be either side or you can be both. It doesn't make any difference. What I was looking at, and I was trying to figure out, there are a lot of people in the United States that don't go to college, and it's not because many of them don't want to have a good income. It is that they just aren't inclined. That they are not the type of person that wants to go to a four-year degree program. That's not their focus. That's not what they want to do. I talked to a kid a year ago, and they were getting ready for all the seniors in high school were having this big celebration, and I was talking with them, and I asked a few of them as I moved around the crowd, and one kid was really pretty honest. He said, "Well, I don't want to go to college. I want to invent something and become a multi-billionaire like Bill Gates." And I said, "Do you know what the odds are on that? About 1 in 400 million. Because if you could be kind of like Bill Gates, if you could invent something like that, but he was very narrowly focused on a specific thing and did it very, very well. But just because he didn't go and finishing out any kind of college degree does not mean that he didn't study to figure out what he was doing, because
right.
you don't build computers and write computer code just by thinking about it in your head. You have to study something, and so he studied something to do that, same way with Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak and others mm-hmm. that were in that computer field. So there are kids that have designed wonderful computer games, but they have studied this stuff at some point in time to a great depth to be able to do this. So you don't have to.
Yeah.
I didn't want to tell the crowd that everybody has to go to college. What I did tell them is there's five other paths if you wanted further education that you can do. There's employer-based training. You could find a job where the employer is willing to pay for the training to get you to where you want to be. And there are lots of jobs that are like that. May need to hunt around, but it's one of the things where if you're not inclined to go to college, during the interview process, you might just want to ask them, what's the training that I need for these types of things?
Mm-hmm.
There's also what you would consider industry-based training. Now, I had a little bit of that, to be candid. While I was in college, I decided I wanted to be an on-the-air personality. Well, for the radio station that I was going to work for, which was a commercial radio station, they required you to have a license issued by the FCC called a first-class radio telephone license. And you had to have a first-class license in order to be on the air, because you were responsible as well for all of the electronic equipment that was around you, and so you had to know what you were doing. And so I went for industry-based training, which was taught at that point in time down in Chicago, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And there were small industry colleges that would teach you all about those electronics and then teach you about the requirements of the FCC first-class license examination, which was half a day long and was very detailed and gave you very specific problems about various types of radio gear and when it's good and when it's bad and what is it going to do. So you had to learn how to tune it and everything else. So that was industrial-based or industry-based training that I received, and that is also a requirement for AFTRA. If you were to be a member of AFTRA, which is the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, you needed to be able to have some kind of certification they knew to be on the air, so they help fund some of the industry-based training. So you can receive that. You don't have to go to college. And a lot of radio announcers may or may not have a college degree, but they are radio announcers or television announcers or whatever it is. You can get certifications. And apprenticeships. You can do what they call post-secondary certifications, in that maybe you received either an associate's degree or a BA, but you want to be, say, a very, very proficient accountant. You can study for and sit for the CPA exam,
mm-hmm.
And become a certified public accountant, which is a certified course, and then that association teaches certified educational credits all year long, certified educational units or CEUs, and you receive additional education as you move through that that occupation, so that you keep abreast of all of the rules and regulations. So that, or you could decide, I'm not a four-year person. I just want to go in and I want to get out and I want to have a job. And maybe I want to do it in healthcare. And this is the ones that I see at a lot of the community colleges, is I decide that within this community, I want to stay in this community, but I want to go into healthcare. That seems to be the big thing that's going on right now. You can go and earn a two-year associate's degree and become a nurse. You can become all kinds of people that would be needed in the medical records people,
mm-hmm.
in the healthcare industry.
Mm-hmm.
If you're out in West Texas, where I was last week, if you're out in West Texas, you may get people that say, well, you know, really what I want to do is I want to go out in the oil fields. Well, you can get a two-year associate's degree out there in petroleum engineering. Now, it's not a four-year degree in petroleum engineering, but it really gives you the practicalities of being out on an oil well and being able to inspect wellheads and making sure that the pressure is right and all of the kinds of things that you need to do in order to maintain all of this equipment where if it's not maintained, it blows up. And you know it when it happens. So there are other opportunities for people to go and do that they don't have to go to college. But I will say this. There are, between now and the year 2020, right now if you were to go out, you would find, if you looked at all of the jobs that are out there, 35% of them are going to require you to have a BA. Of all the jobs that are out there. Now, typically, if I'm going to go out and get a apprenticeship or I'm going to go out and get some industry training like truck driving, and truck drivers, you know, we need truck drivers. We need to move goods across the country. But they have to have a commercial license, and they have to have ratings that show that they're able to handle this very heavy piece of equipment with a big, heavy load behind them. You just don't hop in the seat because I know how to drive a car and drive one of these 18-wheelers. You have to go to school for that. You know, they may not make as much as a neurosurgeon, but they're happy in what they're doing, and they enjoy that type of life. But they'll get a certification for that. And for those that may not have a lot of money, that's one way to begin. They may also decide that what I really want to do is I want to do that for a while, and then I want to go further. So I like the healthcare profession. I'm going to go out and get and be a nurse. While I'm doing that, then I'm going to earn an income. And while I'm earning an income, maybe I'll use that income to apply for my third year and fourth year in college. And now I get my bachelor's of science in that. And then I go and get my master's of science in that. And maybe I get my doctorate in that. So all of those types of things, I think, are available to people. They just have to have a plan that this is how they're going to do it.
Yeah, you know, Rip, when I was at my former organization, I started doing really pre-college choice counseling, and it's something that NAVACORE is doing now. But you talk to kids that are 16, 17, 18. Matter of fact, for years, I would do once a year just seminar with one of our Cornerstone Credit Union League members, CU of Texas, just down the 635 from us here. Anyway, it would be, you'd never expect a 17-year-old to say, "I know exactly what I want to do with the rest of my life."
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, it would be easier because if you did, well, A, you'd be able to forecast what your income would be instead of what it was the number we said. Assume you're making $36,000 in your first job, which may be very right on for vast majority. It may be less than that depending on the sector you're in. But you can look and say, if I'm going to come out with a BA, I'm going to come out with a master's, or I'm going to have a doctorate. If I'm going to be in petroleum, or if I'm going to be in law, I'm going to be in the arts, I'm going to be a teacher, I'm going to be in law enforcement, whatever, or I'm going to be a journalist, you would be able to say what would be a good first-year income, fifth-year income, if you say 5 years in, what would be the growth and your potential. They would give you ranges of saying, oh, depending on your level of responsibility and how quickly you move up, you'd be able to say, this is my range, this is my potential. And it would help you forecast what you could potentially absorb from college loans. And remembering that at 17 or 18, the kids are focused on college. They're not thinking about all the other things that once they graduate from school, you know, getting their first apartment, getting their first car loan, you know, getting a professional wardrobe or dating and getting married, you know, starting a family, all those things. They're not thinking about that, and they're not thinking that, well, gee, the decisions I make right now with where I go to college could have an impact on my ability to, you know, where I'll be living or getting my first loans, or what does that mean to my credit? So, but I'd say if you know, great, you can forecast just a little bit and say, all right, if I knew I was making 36, and let's just use an example that it's an easy one. If I'm going to go into education, and I want to work in Dallas ISD or Allentown, one of the one of the ISDs. You know, say we're in Plano, Plano ISD. You know, I don't know what the starting there versus Dallas, but I would say you're looking in the 30s to 40 range for a
PhD. That's right.
So, so and obviously, if you've got multiple degrees, you may be able to get more, but I think it'd be like the high 30s is where you'd be looking. So, if you knew that you're going to be making, let's say, $37,000 your first year out of school, and you had a choice of saying, could I graduate with A, $25,000 of student loans because I went for 2 years to Collin County Community College, and then I transferred my final 2 years. I went to a four-year school, and I went to a public school like UT in Austin. And based on what I was working, I was able to graduate with $25,000. Well, $25,000 versus a gross of 30, let's say 37, is still more than that half that you started the show off by saying. Let's say student B would say, I'm going to make that same $37,000, but I'm going to finance 4 years at UT Austin. And I'm going to come out with closer to 50 or 60 based on what I can borrow or what I and what I can pay as I go. Versus somebody who says, I'm going to go down halfway to Austin. I'm going to stop in Waco and go to Baylor, a private school, where the cost is 50 a year. And then let's say with some aid and maybe some help or – let's say they're going to come out with $100,000 of student loan debt. And it doesn't matter whether you did 4 years at a private school, 4 years at a public school, or 2 years at a public school, 2 years at a community college. You're going to get the same starting salary.
That's right.
That is where you look and say, the return on investment specific to that job, well, the best return on investment would be doing the blended 2 years community college, 2 years public school. And the lowest return on investment would be going to the private school because you paid a lot more to earn the same amount in year one. Now, does that mean all education is completely equal? I won't say that. Every school is probably going to think they've got the best product out there, and they should. All I'm saying is you need to take into account your income, not to mention any other resources, because if mom and dad are going to say we're going to step up and pay for Baylor – well, then you say, it's not my problem. All I have to worry about is a $37,000 a year salary is where I'm starting at with no debt. But if you know that you're responsible for part of it, you need to be thinking why you make that choice about college, not while you're a sophomore there and not while you're graduated, like my friend Amy's son is now doing, and he's saying, huh, my sister's paying a lot less to go in-state to Rutgers than I did to go out-of-state to a private school like Quinnipiac. And you know, it makes me think of Star Wars. Only now do you see the full power of the dark side of the Force. You know, it's like, wow, that doesn't mean private schools are dark side. It just means you chose the expensive path, and now you're going to see the ramifications, the consequences.
And why, you know, why leave an educational facility with such an anchor around your neck? I mean, to me, that would be, you know, extremely depressing, and it may weigh upon you as far as what kind of career or job you might take, because you might look at something that is a great opportunity, but is not, you know, the starting pay is not really all that fantastic, and you might decide, well, I'm just going to turn that down because I can't afford that. I need something higher than that to be able to begin payments on my student loan. And that's not the greatest idea in the world, or the greatest decision in the world. To give the audience a couple of ideas, if you want to do some research on this, maybe you're a student or maybe you're in high school or you're a student in college or you're a parent, here's a couple of places. I would first go to Georgetown University, and that doesn't mean attend Georgetown University. I mean go out to the Internet and go to Georgetown University, and they have within their website is the educational component. They do a tremendous amount of research and study in education and educational systems and being able to pay for education and jobs and careers and those types of things. So that's what their master's students and their doctoral students do all of the time, and they publish this research out on their website. So you can get copies of this research at Georgetown University for practically nothing to zero. I mean, there might be a research report that's a couple of dollars, but most of the research reports that are out there are just out there for the public good, and they're wonderful things. The first one that I would get is Five Ways to Pay for Technical Education, for Career and Technical Education. It's called Five Ways to Pay for Career and Technical Education, and basically what it says is, if you want to go the college avenue, here's what you need to think about. If you, however, don't want to do that, you want a career in the technical area, here are ways that you can do that, but here's the anticipation of what you're going to be paid. So it will tell you what your starting pay is, what your pay will might be 5 years out, and if you're in, say, you excel in this career, therefore you're at the top of your game, you're in the 75th percentile, this is probably what your pay will be out when you're 45, 50, 60 years old. So you can take a look at that and make some decisions. The other one that I would recommend is the Economic Value of College Majors. And that's a huge study, but it's called the Economic Value of College Majors. It's probably the most detailed and wonderful study that I've ever read in this subject matter, from the standpoint that not only do they take it from a macro level, but then they start to dice it down into the micro level. In essence, they take a look at it from, say, the STEM, the STEM components, business, arts, et cetera, and they say, in general, if you're in science, technology, engineering, or math, this is where you're going to be. If you're in business, this is where you would be as far as starting pays, ending pays, and what you would need for this type of career. Then they take a look at each one of the individual components. They start breaking it down. So for business, they'll look at business accounting, business marketing, business management, business human resources. And they will break those levels down even more granular and say, if you're at the top of your game when you go in here, this is what you can expect. So just to give you an idea, people that typically leave with a bachelor's degree in, say, a STEM program, science, technology, engineering, or math, will have a starting pay of about $43,000 a year. If they are leaving and in business, their starting pay is probably around $37,000. If you're in the arts, you decide that that's what you want to do, the arts or the humanities, something of that nature, you're probably going to start at $29,000. Compare that to a high school person that decides, well, I'm just going to go out and get a job. And they're probably going to earn $22,000 a year. And they're not going to get a starting pay of $22,000 a year. They're going to be hourly, and they'll probably be able to earn $22,000 a year. If you take a look at their career expectations and they're just average. Then the person that is in the science and technology will actually be able to reach $76,000 a year. Business will probably top end about $65,000, arts $51,000. So again, if I'm just average and I want to be an arts instructor of some sort, you may only get to about $51,000 when you're 50 years old. So you have to take that in mind. If you excel, you're probably doing $72,000. If you're a high school student and you just, that's what you want to do, it's going to be between $36,000 and $50,000. So keep in mind that that's what you're going to do. But I would recommend going out and taking a look at these things and dicing it down to determine really what do you want to do and where do you want to go. And I understand that you know, kids will go to college and they'll say, this is my major, I'm going to go into communications. And then they decide not to go into communications for whatever reason. Maybe they find something much more attractive while they're at college that is enthusiastic to them. There are certainly a lot of them that go and decide that what they want to do is go into medicine, and then they take organic chemistry. That's one of the blowout courses. And then they
I was pre-med. Organic is what killed me. I went to business, and then I finished up in journalism and telecom.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I mean, but what's amazing is how people can switch. There are people that will go in for journalism and decide that, gosh, you know, science is really easy and it comes to me very quickly, and math comes to me very quickly, and I took inorganic chemistry and I loved it, so I've decided to sign up for organic chemistry, and I blew that away with a straight A. I'm going into medicine. And so they go the opposite direction, and then they end up reporting about medicine on CNN, you never know. That may be the career path that they've decided. But, you know, if you have a little bit of a plan, at least you can modify the plan. If you have absolutely no plan at all, then any path will do. It's kind of like the Cheshire Cat sitting on the limb.
Yeah, and parents, remember, this is not for your kids alone to navigate and figure out, because their burden is your burden, and you want to see them succeed. You don't want to see them pursue a field of study and then say, wow, I thought I was going to be able to make more money. So if they're trying to learn their passions while they're in high school, it would be really valuable to read studies like this and just make them aware and just say, you're not only going to school for your income ceiling, but you need to realize that that is part of it. And talk about it early. Don't talk about it while they're seniors and thinking about their schools. Don't talk about it while they're halfway through their college career. And also don't talk about it when they're 20 and they've still not decided whether or not they want to go to college either. Talk about this early on. It's not just a matter of are you going to college, yes or no, but talk about all the intricacies, but the long-term impact of what you have to finance, what you have to borrow, and how that plays out into the rest of your life.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a really important point that, you know, we take a look at these types of things and we take a look and see that not always can I afford absolutely everything. And so you have to make those types of decisions. And the one thing that I noticed in the Georgetown University called Five Ways to Pay, and again, the two that I recommend is Five Ways to Pay for Career and Technical Education, and also The Economic Value of College Majors. And both of those, I would say, are required studies if people are thinking of going on and getting education further than high school. But what I thought was very, very interesting was this one quote or this one piece of writing in there that I'm going to quote to you, and basically it said this: workers with the least education are likely to encounter further barriers to earnings increases once on the job because they are less likely to receive employer training and less likely to gain access to technology that leads to earnings advantages. And it's so true in most of the things that we do within society, is that if I'm just going out there and I'm just going to do a job and that's all I'm going to do is this kind of routine job day after day after day, I shouldn't expect a whole lot. That, you know, maybe that's my mindset. Maybe that's what I want to do. And I'm not saying that that's wrong. I mean, I would say that that's right. If that's what a person wants to do, is they just want to do, you know, some kind of routine thing day after day after day, and just make a paycheck and then leave and hopefully they save some money and they feel that that's a job and that's all they want to have is a job. They don't want to really have any kind of other responsibility. I mean, go ahead and do that, but here's what I would recommend. Do the best that you can when you do that type of job. So if the only thing you're going to do is sit on an assembly line and watch things go by and every once in a while decide that something that's going by is not right, do the best that you possibly can on that. But I will guarantee this, that when you walk even into that kind of routine job, you're going to get training. I don't care if it is you're going to work at a restaurant and you're going to be a dishwasher, and you want to be the best dishwasher that you can possibly be. I think that that's very, very important for everybody to really do that and to understand. But the other thing that you might realize is that employer may decide that, gosh, you're so good at doing that we want to put you ahead of maintenance or something else. So they may open up the door for a possibility that you can have other opportunities in front of you, and if those opportunities present themselves, take them, and live with them and move with them, because, you know, 30% of all middle education jobs require some training of 3 to 12 months. It's 30% of all middle income jobs require training of 3 to 12 months somehow, somewhere, and somebody's going to pay for that, and hopefully that the employer pays for that. So anyway, it was great talking with you again on Your Money, Your Matters, brought on Blog Talk Radio by Cornerstone Credit Union League and Navicor Solutions. And we certainly are glad to present this to you every single Tuesday. So we thank Todd Mark for being with us, and myself, Rick Grady. We hope that we imparted some useful information to you. And we hope that you will be here again next week as we present more education on financial matters on Your Money, Your Matters.
And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loved you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place.